choose a more positive mode. Paint a picture of yourself so that when you meet a challenge, you automatically access your connection to God. Lord, what would you have me do? You are the creator of the entire universe, and you have the answers I need. You have the supply that is required. I am your child, and you must see to it that I have all I need to succeed. Then feel that from behind you, there is a flow of intelligence and wisdom coming as creative, uplifting thoughts. Life force is flowing to you to give you unlimited energy and health-inducing radiance. There is a pipeline of abundance flowing to you from unknown and delightful sources. And a quote from Lari Mahasaya. Though man's ingenuity for getting himself into trouble appears to be endless, the infinite succor is no less resourceful. You are not a passive participant here, but you are actively attuning your thoughts, words, and actions to the divine will. You are his instrument, and you feel joy at his moment through you. In fact, you are so focused on doing his moment-to-moment will. Fear is now a distant past. When you are in need, you increase your prayer demand that he give you more, and you open wider to the idea that you are his instrument. A loving father may test his child in order that he or she learn an important lesson, but a loving parent would never abandon the child. So your heavenly father, divine mother, may test you to hone your focus of attention to be upon God alone. Do not waste your time and energy on nervousness, which has never accomplished a good and noble act. Rather, know God as your ultimate resource, comfort, and guide. The quality of your life will change in remarkable ways. There is no greater or more effective way to live your life than to be God's instrument and live with full faith and confidence in his presence. And a health update. An MRI examination of the brain revealed a total of 5 melanoma tumors in the brain. Some of them were very tiny. There is a plan being made to use radiation therapy. According to Mayo Clinic, radiation therapy is a type of cancer treatment that uses beams of intense energy to kill cancer cells. Radiation therapy most often uses X-rays, but protons and other types of energy can also be used. The current plan is that in the next few weeks, I will have 3 treatments on 3 consecutive days. Each treatment will last approximately 30 minutes, and that should eliminate the tumors. There are more details for its preparation. Side effects may include fatigue, loss of hair on the spots treated, etc. After this, I will be monitored by periodic MRIs. A biopsy was also taken last week from the spine. The results will be known this week. If it is more melanoma, the material will be used for immunotherapy concoction that will be created and injected back into the body to eliminate tumors, wherever they may be found. Of course, your thoughts and prayers for perfect health are of tremendous benefit. These secret warrior vibrations help to explain the amazement that doctors and nurses have had at the way I've come through all of this that I have. I feel strong and positive that this body should go on to perfect health, ever in God and Guru's loving care. Sometimes when these things happen to us, we think that perhaps God has abandoned us and that we are not in his grace. The other way to look at it is that, for whatever reason, he has chosen to take us through such experiences, and that it is through his grace that we have the strength to endure these things, to rise above it, and even to create perfect healing in the moment. All is according to his will. When we have that perfect trust in him, that perfect faith, that He is in charge of everything that is, then we don't feel that we are abandoned. We feel that He is right inside of us, that it is His life force that takes us through these things. So let us not doubt God. Let us have perfect and full faith in Him. And when we find Him, His presence inside, then we have perfect equanimity. I told the doctor that I take all of this as information that he's giving me. I don't have emotional reactions to it. And he said, that's good. That explains why I've come through it so well. There's more to it, though. How is it that we have perfect equanimity no matter what happens to us? It is knowing that God is with us. He is directing us and all the events around us. You think about times in the past when you've gone through hard times, when there are financial problems, when there are health challenges, when you've had these things come to you, a relationship that breaks down and goes away, and you're not necessarily in favor of any of these things happening, but your mind automatically reaches back. As I said, paint a picture of yourself. Create an image in your mind that as soon as anything happens, your mind automatically goes to God. And you reach out for Him. You open yourself to His strength, His love, His intelligence. And it makes all the difference in the quality of your life. Truly it does. Throughout all of this, I have not had any doubts that it is God. There was one moment when I had the stroke. It was a week afterwards. And Carl and I have something we do with each other. If something is just a raw emotion, then we ask for permission from the other person just to express it. And we say how long we want for it. Rarely do we take the full amount of time. I said, I'd like a minute to just voice something that's inside of me. And so she agreed to it. And I said, I don't like this. That was it. So that wasn't even a minute. So I didn't like the situation I was in. They would ask me to raise my arm or raise my leg, and I couldn't get it to move, not even a scintilla. So that's very frustrating when that happens, especially when they're asking you to focus on it and do it. The reason that they do that, they want the message to go from the brain to that part of your body. It starts to build the pathways. Your body responds. That's why it's so important that we have positive thoughts. We have thoughts of strength and wholeness, because the brain starts to manufacture those thoughts. It starts to create pathways for it. If we just simply sink into a tamasic state, if we think depressive, then that's what we're creating as well. And the brain won't demand more, so it doesn't create more. It's a law of need and supply. If you say you need it, and it's hard to do sometimes in the midst, you just think, I don't have enough. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough supply. I don't have enough of whatever it is that I need. And your mind sinks into that, and then you tend to create that. And rather, you think of yourself, okay, I'm open to that supply. I see a pipeline of supply coming to me, whether it's health, whether it's material things, whatever it might be, the intelligence, the wisdom to know what to do. And you see that pipeline flowing to you. And so your mind is creating that. It's creating the demand. And as a result, the supply will come. May not happen in a moment or a day. And like I say, it's not a matter of you just saying, okay, God, I need this. And then you just sit on your hands and you wait for Him to do something. Rather, you think to yourself, this is what I need. Now I am your instrument. You guide me. You show me what to do. And then you get to work and you do it. That opens up the supply line as well. If you're not open to doing something for yourself, you just can't expect God to do it all for you. It might be you sit down and you meditate, or you clean the kitchen and clean those dirty dishes. You think, well, what does that have to do with my supply? But you're out of harmony with Him because you have a mess around you. So the first thing you do is you clean up the mess. There's a principle in Feng Shui that if you want change in your life, you start changing the things that are around you. 39 things it is. You move them. That opens up the energy pathways for change to come into your life. So you have to do something first. It's an act of faith. It's an act of affirmation. There is an author named Hayes, and she talked about if you want to go on a trip and you don't have the money for it, you save some money, you go out and you buy some luggage. It's an affirmation of faith that you are going to go on a trip, and that helps to open up the pathways then that the supply should come to you for that trip to come. So we take positive steps. You think in positive ways. And most of all, you think of God, for He is the ultimate supply. You think He has created this entire universe. There is no limit to His supply. Where did all that energy come from for Him to create this universe for? It was inside of Himself. It's part of Him, and therefore it's also part of you. So don't think on the things that are negative. Don't think on the things that you think may happen, but rather get to work and think of God being your supply. I have been working on my notes that I kept when I was at Anandashram in 1998, 1999, and I'm planning on publishing them by the end of the summer in time for Swamiji's celebration, and it's dedicated to Him. This is entitled The Bee of My Mind. Swami Chidananda is a well-known Swami. He's passed away now, but he's known all over Europe and India and wrote many books. He came to the ashram, and he is a big draw while it's there. When I normally had a room to myself, but when he came, the ashram was filled to overflowing. I had one of his disciples and a disciple of Anandi Moy Ma staying with me. And it was wonderful to have them. And one day Swami Chidananda asked to see me because Swami Sat Chidananda had asked me to be in charge of the Westerners. And Swami Chidananda wanted to thank me for doing that seva. And the disciple of Swami Chidananda says people travel all around the world to have the darshan on Chidananda, and here he is asking to see you. And I thought, oh, that's very interesting. He couldn't believe it. And so he gave some satsangs. And in this one satsang, I write, Swami Chidananda made an analogy that reminded me of when I was a beekeeper for a season many years before. The Swami said, if you find doing yogic practices too hard within your worldly life, then take a lesson from the bees. A beekeeper knows that if you want to move all the bees to a new hive, you could try to move each and every bee one by one. But even then, the bees would not stay in the new hive. However, when the queen bee is transferred over, then it is unnecessary to move all the bees, for they will follow wherever the queen goes. In your spiritual practice, the queen bee is repeating the name of God. With that repetition, all other thoughts will follow to the new hive of God consciousness. So you can try the queen bee's approach and chant God's name continuously. I think that's wonderful, and it's very true. You start to chant the name of God, but you just don't chant it. You feel the vibration as you chant it. When I started chanting the name of God, I was not one who spoke very much, so my voice would give out after chanting it for a little bit. With the stroke, my voice is given out, and that's why I have a hoarseness. Sometimes I don't have it. Sometimes, most times I do. So I hope you'll pardon me, and you're able to hear me in giving this talk. I know it will come back to me. So then on the next day, February 9th on Tuesday, inner stillness prevails. And this is satsang with Swami Satchitananda. And a devotee asks, what is the static state? Swamiji says, the static state is like a screen on which a movie is shown. With all the moving pictures, the screen is the same. If there is a fire in the movie, the screen is the same. If there is a waterfall, the screen is the same. The screen is unaffected by it all. Devotee, is it a still thing? Swamiji, yes, it is still. It is aware of the movie, but it is not moved from the stillness. Devotee, what is the guru then? Swamiji, guru is part of the movie. Devotee, but guru is really the screen. Swamiji, yes, the guru's real nature is the screen. But what we generally see is not that. No, beyond the form and the guru and the screen are the same. That is the static nature of God. Once there was a boy named Prabhula. His father was a king. Prabhula used to sing the name of Narada. He's one of the gods in India. His father said, no, if my son sings any name, it should be mine, as he thought he was the greatest one. The boy not only did not do what the father asked, but he got his friends all to chant Narada's name as well. By focusing the mind on the guru, you can still the mind. Devotee, Swamiji, is there really God realization or is it a state of mind? Swamiji, no, God realization is beyond the mind. One has to go beyond the mind and intellect in order to realize God. That is the static nature. God is beyond all else. And then I continue. The self is still. I feel the thoughts of so many in North America drawing me back. I feel the draw, and that is a temptation. Where I am is where I'm supposed to be. No draws, no elsewhere. I cannot leave while I am still short of the goal. Will I attain my heart's desire in this lifetime? I cannot say, only that it is completely in His hands. I have surrendered heart, mind, and soul. There is nothing I claim for my own. No possessions, no position, not this body or this self. The power for total extinction is this little self, is according to His will. Will I be disappointed if this does not happen before I leave India? I am not sure. Before coming, I did not know what would occur while I am here. I have come to the ashram. I have come to Swamiji for God realization. He has given me all I could expect and more. In that, I am satisfied. Do I want more? I want what is God's will. I cannot think past that. I do not feel God wants realization for this form. I do feel that God wants realization for this form. Why else would He bring me here? Others may have expectations of what I should be, but I do not live for others. I am quiet, still within. I am focused, but not anxious. I am resolved, but not frantic. Fear has left me. Desire is currently mastered. There is no fear, anger, greed, or lust, only traces of that I continue to cut to nothingness and wash clean when any of these arise. But there is calm. Whatever needs to be done will be done by the masters. The inner guru holds the key. I am lowly lying at the feet of that one. There is nothing else. All that has occurred has been through its grace. My will, my strength, my anything, derives its power from the source. I await upon its pleasure. That is the singular focus of my mind. And I am at peace, whatever it decides. Om Tat Sat. I'll read a little bit more here. I had a dream of Master. I was reminiscing with some others about his recent leaving of the body. Before he left, Master had asked a saint to come out of seclusion for a concert of some kind. This is all in the dream that he had organized. It was a very popular event. It reminded me of George Harrison's Bangladesh concert. The saint reminded me of Prabhupada. The saint even extended his life for a few months in order to comply with Master's wishes. Now Master had left, and a few of us involved were thinking out loud how great Master is, and that if he had stayed in the body, he could have made the United Nations really work. He could have made this world over into something brand new. I awoke with the feeling of such love and awe for Master. How bold his is. How fearless he challenged the world to be better than it is. He challenged us to be better than we are, to fulfill our divine potential. Oh, I could sing his praises endlessly from now on. I feel him calling me, calling us. My thoughts flow in a direction about Master and saints in general. I'm reminded of a sense I had here in India. It concerns how many devotees and even Swamis project an attitude about who Master is, who Papa is, who these great saints are, that we in this lifetime could never dare to be what these great ones are. The standard projection is that it will take many, many lifetimes to make that leap. It is that not counter to these Master's very life's images? Are they not calling us to rise up to their level? Are they not doing all in their power to lift us to themselves? As Papa says, God realization is not a joke. You have to be willing to sacrifice all that in the end. We should feel profound awe for these great Masters. But to build a wall between ourselves and them, mortared by their greatness, does not serve their or our real purpose. These great Masters want no wall separating themselves from us. They absolutely deserve our respect, our genuine recognition of what they achieved. What we should not be are Monday morning quarterbacks who fantasize about how much better we could have done in their position. We absolutely have to work every day to actualize the truth they taught us, everyday lives. But the same God that is in them is also in us. The same potential is ours. Mother and all saints make God seem real and attainable. That is their mission. It is the lazy ego that assigns all of God to another, but makes excuses and denies the same God in his own self. This is due to lack of passion and resolve. I cannot do what Jesus did. I cannot be what Yogananda was. I cannot be a Papa. Truly, you are already that, deep within you. You have but to realize it. The Masters call down through time to us. Be bold. Reach out with all that you have, all that you are, and God will respond to you. He will lift you unto himself, and you will be one with him forevermore. Om Gurus. This is a poem I wrote. Om Mother, Master, saints and sages of all, you hold a mirror to my soul. Come, behold yourself in me. You proclaim, envision your true being. O Mother, Master, saints and sages all, my mirror is darkened, my doors to the soul rusty, and the cells of my being are dead. O O Mother, Master, saints and sages all, open these blind eyes to your light. Swing wide the heavenly realms. Awaken the sleeper to the all-encompassing spirit. O Mother, Master, saints and sages all, you are not vague and far off, but deep, profound, the core of truth. Verily, you are myself ever calling to me. So I look forward when these things are available for publishing, and I hope you will benefit from them. It is a profound experience going to the ashram. I knew God was taking me there for deepened meditation. What I did not know was the depth and breadth of Swamiji before I encountered him. Mother talked about him always very lovingly, and she had great love for him. One time, Mataji was in a group, and she said to Swamiji, "An astrologer has said that you're going to die soon." And she left it at that. Mother was very bold, and she patted Swamiji, and she said, "Never mind, you will live a long life." This was sacrilegious to do at the ashram, to counter anything that Mataji said. But Mother was very bold when she felt God speaking through her, that none of us are bound by a destiny, that God can override anything like that. And so we should not think in limited terms, but think in open-ended terms. If it is God's will, he will see to it that you have the strength, the life energy, the enthusiasm for life to bring about all that he wills for you. So this is important for us to do in our lives, is to have that open-endedness with God. We can take things as information, but don't take it as definition. We hear some prognosis. We hear some anticipation of what's to happen in the future. We have those thoughts ourselves. I'm getting older, or I don't have very much. And we repeat that over and over again, and it becomes a prophecy fulfilled. God wants all the best for you, and we shouldn't limit ourselves or him in our own beings. It's such an easy habit to drop into, especially tamasic habits. I remember when I was in my late teens, and I felt myself slipping into a depression that I oftentimes experienced at that time. It was a spiritual and existential crisis I was facing. I was not content with the world as I found it, but I didn't have any greater vision. So I felt myself slipping in. I was amazed to see, like a comfortable pair of old slippers, that is actually seductive and drawing me into this depressive, tamasic state. And so I mentally screamed, "No, I would not do that." And with all my will, I pulled myself out of that easy habit, because if I slipped into it, it was like going into a ravine. And then I'd have to work myself back out of the ravine, which is a very hard thing to do. How much better to course correct in that moment, pull myself out, and then I didn't have far to go to get back onto the path. Sometimes we come to a Y on the path, and we choose the wrong one, and we go so far down it, and we realize, this is not good. This is not taking me where I want to go. And we make a strong mental effort. We go back to that Y in the path again, and we make another determination. We have free will. There's no predetermination that absolutely makes us do anything. And so we enact that free will. We use our will. The more you use your will, the stronger it will grow. If you don't use it much, you don't have any faith in it. You won't give it your all when it comes. So when, even though now I am able to walk, I still walk not in full strength in my old way. It's like teaching myself to have to walk all over again. I visualize in my mind smooth flow, confident energy flowing through this body as I'm walking. And then when I'm walking, I work on it. One of the things that a healthy step is that you lean to your right, you pull your left foot forward, and you come down on your heel. To do that, you have to have the confidence. So I practice doing that, and my walk and my gait is getting smoother every day. I still go slowly because it's safety first, and I have to be mindful. So I can't be careless with it, or I might go down, and an injury would be worse right now. So I'm still very mindful when I do my walking. But I see myself with that smooth flow of energy, with confidence and all God's strength. And it's improving every day. This is something that we can do in anything that we do. Say you're going in for a job interview and you have not much confidence. You feel nervous doing it. If you just continue with that, when you go in for the job interview, sure enough, you'll be nervous through the whole interview. You might lose your train of thought. You can program yourself by visualizing yourself going through that interview. You're calm, you're confident, the thoughts flow easily to you, and it's enjoyable, and that you're interviewing them just as much as you're being interviewed. I remember a friend and fellow devotee. He's a top CPA. He went to work for one of the top corporations in the U.S. And when he interviewed with them, at the end of the interview, he says, "I want to see your books. I want to see what you're doing and how you're doing it." He wanted to make sure that they're a first-class operation. Imagine going in for a job interview and asking for that. And they gave him access to the books, and he saw that they were a quality organization. Nothing suspicious or wrong about it. So he accepted the job. Remember to put yourself at the center of creation, and not from an egotistical standpoint, but the God within you is at the center of this creation. This world revolves around you and the will of God inside of you. It's a vast difference doing it with God at the center, and you are at the center of God, than doing it from an egotist standpoint. An egotist will not be open to new information. They'll think my way alone is right, all others are wrong. When you're submitted to God, you're already open to His direction, and He might give you direction through others. You're always open to learning. You're always open to expanding, and it requires no loss of confidence to be able to do this. In fact, you have to have great confidence to be open to the wisdom of a child. Jesus one time encountered a child and said, "Look at this child. He has all the wisdom of the ages in him, and he'll have far more wisdom than those who think of themselves as great spiritual teachers, but are closed off. They're intellectuals only. They're not really open to the wisdom of God." Open yourself to that wisdom. Feel that God is speaking to you. Sometimes, especially in the beginning, you don't know what that means. So you just think, "All right, I'm going to live to the highest light that I know." And you open yourself to what God's inner direction is. And you go according to that. When you are sincere, even if you make a mistake, you will feel that, "Oh, I've gone down the wrong path here. I need to get back to the why, re-examine this question all over again." Something will feel wrong to you. Most often it'll be here in the solar plexus. Sometimes you can feel nervous down in your stomach, but this intuition is different than that. It feels off. It feels wrong. And so you stay open to that, even though you've made a decision in all the faith that you knew at the time, to the highest light that's inside of you. These are practical ways to go about building up that intuition. You start with little things oftentimes, and you work into the big things. And the more confidence you grow in that intuition, you'll recognize the difference between what you want and what you think is right and what God is prompting you to do. It comes from a different source. It has a different quality to it. When it's you, it's a closed system. It's just what you think. When it's God, you feel the purity. You feel the upliftment. And it will always be for the highest good of all. It will never be for selfish purposes. So that's one way that you can tell. It's not selfish. Another way you can tell, it's never driven by fear. If I don't do this right now, then something bad's going to happen. And that's what's driving your decision. When it's calm, you have a clarity. This is the right way. This is the correct way. And this is what I should do. That inner calm is like the eye of the storm. All the world may be swirling around you, but you're focused right in that middle of the great I am. And it's unmoved by the storm. It's calm in the eye of the storm. And when you get it there, then you can step forward in confidence. This is God guiding me. Don't be governed by the events in this world. Be at the center of your own world. And let that I within you, the great I am, guide and direct you. To do that, you have to practice. You can't just imagine it and say, well, I think this is what God is telling me to do. You have to feel it deep inside of you. And then you identify the quality of that inner direction. Some people do the lazy man's way. And it's just whatever they feel in the moment. This is God telling me to do this and that. And they're not really going to work. They're not really doing it according to the highest principles. And they won't get the results. So learn to identify that deep inner knowing. It won't be driven by fear. It won't be driven by ego. And then you open yourself to the abundance of God coming to you. When you encounter something that triggers your fear, if you're a careful observer, you'll sense all along your spine, you'll close down to this vital information coming to you. You'll feel contracted. You'll feel closed off. Take a breath. Focus on your asana. Focus on God. And then relax along your spine. Feel that there is a conduit coming directly from God, coming to you. Conduit of intelligence, conduit of life energy, conduit of all supply. It's all flowing to you. It's in the pipeline. It may not be with you right in this moment, but feel that it's coming to you. And as you remain open to it, you'll get that supply. You can just say to yourself, I want $1 million. And just because you do, you want the affluence, you want the luxury that that brings to you. But you're not really sensing what God wants for you. And you can think it to yourself, but you don't really believe it. It does no good to act like that. First you go inside. You say, God, I know that the abundance you will for me is already coming to me. It may not look like what you want. Mother described one time that she told God that she needed a new dress. She only had one dress at the time. And when it came to her, it was hand-me-downs from other people. She thought, that's not what I was wanting. I wanted the money so I could go out and buy something I wanted that was brand new. But that's what God chose to give to her. So when it comes to you, and feel this is God's affluence coming to me. And when you think that to yourself, you open yourself to more. So that when God wills it, everything that He has is yours. One time Mother asked, Lord, what is your will for me? This is when she is in a high state of realization. And God said, whatever your will is my will. That's quite a reversal. Think of surrendering to God. But God is then acting through you, thinking through, feeling through you. There's no difference between you and He then. That's when you get to that state of advanced realization. And it doesn't trigger your ego. You are in awe from humility at all that he thinks and does for you. So, be an engine for success. And you do that by putting God first. And then he will see to it. You know, a yogi who lives in a cave may have just a loincloth, but he is a huge success because he has God. It may not always be what we imagine it to look like to be a huge success. You think of the story, It's a Wonderful Life, and that he thought he was a total failure. And because he had the richness of friends, and he had earned the respect of his community, and he always had done what is dharmic, then he was success, even though he didn't think of himself as that. It didn't match his mental image of what that looked like. So being a success doesn't always mean you have millions and millions. In fact, there are those who have millions and millions, and they don't recognize that they're a success. They always think that they need more. They want more. One man's ceiling is another man's floor. And one man's floor is another man's ceiling. Be happy with what God gives to you. It doesn't mean that you can't be instilled with a desire for more, especially spirituality, purity, wisdom, and the power of God. That you can always keep wide open. That God give you as much as he chooses. And you never know the effect that you have on others. You're leading a dharmic life. And you think, I don't have much. And I don't have much influence in this world. But you never know that you influence one person who influences another. And how it goes like ripples from a rock fall thrown into a still pond. Be that still screen that the projector in life is projecting images. But you are ever still. You are ever one with God. And the images dance upon you. And you are unmoved by them. You are always anchored in God. And then you will find eternal happiness. You will be an engine for success. With all love and blessings, I bow to the God within you. That you may awaken to the great divinity that is in you now and always, that you may know it and feel it and experience it, and you will be a great success in this life, whatever your outer realm looks like. Om, peace, bliss, amen. Now let us meditate for a while, thinking on that splendor residing inside of you. It is radiant, it is love, it is all goodness in life, and you are that.